Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Stagecraft, Variety's theater podcast, bringing you backstage and behind the scenes with stars, creators, and industry leaders on Broadway and beyond. I'm Gordon Cox. On this episode of Stagecraft, I'm talking to Greg Mozgalla and Carrie Young, two actors now on Broadway in the Manhattan Theater Club production of Martina Mayoch's Pulitzer Prize-winning play, Cost of Living. Mozgalla, also a dancer and a disability advocate, has appeared in shows including Teenage Dick and Shakespeare in the Park's recent Richard III, while Young was Tony-nominated last season for her Broadway debut in the Lynn Nottage comedy Clydes. In Cost of Living, Mozgalla plays John, a wealthy graduate student with cerebral palsy. It's a role that the actor, who also has cerebral palsy, originated in three previous productions of the play. In the Broadway staging, Young plays Jess, the young woman John hires to be his caregiver. The two are now in the virtual studio with me to talk intimacy, connection, and making sure the water's warm when you're showering on stage.
Hi, Karen, Greg. Thanks for joining me.
So great to be here. Thank you, Gordon.
Thank you for having us, Gordon.
I wonder if we could start by just talking a bit about how each of you got involved in this show. First of all, Greg, you've been involved in Cost of Living pretty much since the beginning, it seems like. How and when did you first become attached?
Well, the play started as two one-acts, essentially. The Eddie and Ani stories and the Jess and John stories. And so I was in the Jess and John one act. It was originally called John, who just moved here from Cambridge. And it was presented at Ensemble Studio Theater as part of their monthly brunch series, where they have this boozy bacon and pancake brunch, you know, where they present a series of one acts. So it was in, so we did it there, you know, with like a chair, a cup, and a bucket. And, right. You know, you could tell right away it was pretty amazing. It was gangbusters even then. And then I've just been involved through the development process, you know, through all the different iterations and productions. And what a great journey and gift as an actor to see something from, yeah, as you said, pretty much inception all the way to where we are now.
Right. And so you did the show. Yeah, exactly. So you did the show at EST, and then it was at Williamstown, and then it was off-Broadway, an MTC production. And then, so Kara, you're new as of this production. Tell me about when you got involved.
I auditioned for it, and I had my callback with Greg, and the rest is history.
Yeah. I mean, the callback was really just a formality. In my mind, I'll say.
Yeah. For both of you, what do you remember about really responding to in your roles? Like, what did you feel like you really connected with? Greg, I guess let's start with you since you first connected with the role.
Sure. So I was born with cerebral palsy, which is what John, the character, is dealing with. He has a much more severe case. And, you know, it's very rare that you see a disabled representation in theater, film, and television, particularly done so well, so thoughtfully and compassionately. And so that was really appealing to me. You know, Martina had crafted a real human, you know, on the page, and the fact that I was going to have a chance to embody that, and the fact that I could bring my full lived experience to a character, which is something that I often grapple with in roles that aren't necessarily disabled, etc., was a really appealing. I was really drawn to that, beyond just the brilliance of Martina's, you know, writing. It was really like this incredible human story that was I was drawn in by.
Yeah. Can you expand a little bit more on what you look for in terms of thoughtful representation? Like, what is often missing and what you feel like this achieves?
Sure. Well, I think there are three kind of pervasive narratives around disability in popular culture. They're overcoming adversity, being a font of inspiration, or dying with dignity. And oftentimes, those characters don't have a lot of agency or voice. So I feel like this play really counters that or challenges that, because you're presenting a full human being who's in the daily struggle for their life and, you know, who isn't necessarily, you know, perfect. And he's in relationship to other people in the world, particularly in this play, you know, Jess, played by Kara. So it's, I feel like there's you get a sense of a real human integrated into the world, dealing with what they're dealing with. And it comes up when it comes up, and then they just, like anybody else, you know, he's just living his life, trying to get by through the world. And that was, again, that alone in 2022 is kind of a radical experimental act. So I think that's why, for me, and I think even early on in this preview process, I feel audiences are really responding to that.
And then, Kara, what do you remember really connecting with in your part?
I remember connecting with the play. Like, when I first read the play, I felt there were moments where, like, I had felt like the amount of, like, the frequency of emotions just kind of went through my body, and it's like the whole spectrum of what you can feel. Particularly, I mean, I knew I was going in for Jess, so I had like a different light bulb on that story. But, you know, the first generation American experience is, you know, could be very universal at times, and what hard work means, and what survival means, and what it means to feel like you have a great responsibility to take care of your own in a way, and that it really does fall on your shoulders to uplift and continue legacy in some kind of way. And Jess's story, and also just, you know, the story of survival, you know, I've found that in a lot of the characters that I've had the honor of playing, the honor of stepping into these roles, they are incredibly resilient women who are, you know, moment to moment, day to day, surviving as best as they could, you know, with dignity, and sometimes pride is at the very last thought, but they push forward. So I think Jess's story, and I'm still, and every single day I'm finding, you know, new stories around Jess's story to fill her, and I'm gonna be doing that to the very end, of trying to honor this person, this very real person that represents a lot of us first-gen Americans in this country who, you know, the immigrant story is almost like a story of no reward. And I feel like, you know, Jess definitely embodies that those worlds, like, you know, we do hard work with often no reward, no acknowledgement of the hard work and the labor that goes down.
Yeah.
I would say the play is also incredibly funny. You know, Martina's humor, like, sings through. And even in her sort of, like, author's note, you know, in the script, She says, there's no room for sentimentality in this play, but there is room for humor. And I think that's what's so great. Like the laughter between the characters and you know, from the audience, is just, there's a ton of it. You know, even though the play is dealing with these heavy subjects, you know, there's something, like, there's so much humor, there's so much heart, you know, in this play. And that was immediate from first read, like jumping off the page, which is also really exciting.
The play is structured really interestingly. Greg, you mentioned that it started as two separate one acts, and you can sort of see that in the way the show moves along. It's like these two parallel stories in a way, the story between John and Jess, which is the story you two are telling on stage, and then the other story with two other actors, and they sort of only intersect at the very end. What do you feel like John and Jess's, your arc, is about, and how do you feel like it contributes to what the play overall is about for you?
I think the difference between Eddie and Ani are a married couple, right? But they're estranged, they're separating, they've been brought together through circumstance because of Ani's car accident, which has left her quadriplegic, right? Jess and John are meeting for the first time. They're new. It's almost like there's this kind of first date quality to their relationship, and they have to figure how to work together. They have to build this, not only like a verbal vocabulary, but also a physical vocabulary, right? Based on John's needs and that care relationship. And I think that the care relationship runs throughout the play. I think through both stories, hugely. And I think there are all these echoes, in the scenes, you know, words like basics and, please. And, you know, there are just these little things that Martina has sort of expertly threaded through. It's just echoes from the various couples, right? That, as you said, don't intersect to the end. And I think what runs through is the universal need for human connection and for interdependency. I think that's what makes the play so relatable, I think, and so powerful, is that, like, anybody watching the audience, anybody, I think all of us on stage, even embodying these characters, understand what that is, because we're all human, we're all flesh and blood. You know, we've all had people in our life deal with illness, deal with pain, deal with death, deal with trauma, in varying degrees. So we get to bring all of that, you know, to bear in sharing this particular story night after night.
Yeah. And Kara, what about for you? What's the play about?
The play is about many things for me. There's so many different stories in this play that I particularly feel connected to. You know, and like the intersectionality between like the feelings of John and Jess, of you know, there are many commonalities in a lot of ways. I feel like the play is about like what it means to connect, like what's that point of connection, you know, what it means for hearts to beat with each other as one, like to be, not to be so cliche about it. I feel like, again, this answer is going to evolve over time. You know, when the play's over, I'm going to be thinking about the play forever. So, but right now I feel like there's this incredible, there's like this train to connection between Jess and John right now. Right. And even for Eddie and Ani, right? Because they're separated, but they've been married, but they were separated when we first meet them. And they're coming together again. And with Jess and John, this point of contact, this point of comfort, like, what does it mean to be comfortable and for it to get ripped away from you in a way, you know, like when we think things are what they, when we really believe things are what they are they really what they are? You know, like, it's just, you know, who, like, our judgments on each other, you know, how we actually see each other, the masks that we do put up in order to step into a room and you know, what we're really going through on the outside, where we find solace, where we find joy, happiness, what makes us tick. Like, literally, I guess I said it earlier, like the spectrum of emotion, the spectrum of what it means to be human and to want to connect with each other, to want to be with each other, you know, when you actually can't think about survival. Like, both Jess and John need something very, very, very different, but at the same time, very similar. What they actually end up needing or end up getting is a visceral, what it means to be two humans in a space together, what it means to actually need each other, you know? Like, I think Eddie says something like, you people go after people when they really fucking need them. Mm. And these two people really need each other right now and end up finding something else in their need for each other, what their need is. Mm. It ends up being completely different. That was all over the place, but I feel like, you know, like this play, it's a very, you know the thing, you understand the thing, and then like what I've been finding is like it's a very living, breathing thing up there, because it is about the magic of humans together, you know. It is that, like, at its core.
I'll have more with Kara and Greg right after the break. Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. And now, here's more with the actors Greg Mozgalla and Carrie Young. There's a lot of intimacy in the scenes between you two, both emotional and physical. How did you go about rehearsing in a way that made you both feel comfortable? Like, was there an intimacy coordinator? How did you work to get to a point in those scenes where you could, you know, do them comfortably every night?
I almost want to give it to Greg, but we didn't have an intimacy coordinator for this for this project, and I do think that there is a place for intimacy coordinators. Greg Mozgalla and I were just very communicative with each other. And I think it really starts at leadership. Leadership really created a very safe space for us to be as honest and feel safe, in a way that if anything that we said or felt, we weren't going to be judged about anything, because we are who we are. And so that creating that safety with each other, and also just an honest communication between me and Greg that we've built over time. We're pretty honest with each other. You know, it just, I think it evolved into what it means to really truly be intimate with two people, you know, what that really means.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you have anything to add?
Yeah, the script calls for Jess to shave and shower John, and you actually see those actions on stage. And I think intimacy is a perfect word, but it's intimacy without the sex, right? There's a huge amount of physical intimacy, right? And I think in this particular iteration, you know, having done the show several times, you know, it's choreographed within an inch of its life. And so Kara is doing an amazing job just managing all that. It's like juggling chainsaws on a tightrope, you know. Just keeping all of those balls in the air, you know. It's really, really incredible. I mean, I just have to sit there, you know, and respond. But it's really, I mean, it's a really wonderful thing to see. And I think, and not an easy task in that process. But again, I think we operated with an assumption of competence and, you know, with a great deal of grace and respect for each other, for the play, the process. And we carried that through. And yes, I would just co-sign what she said about, you know, leadership, Joe, Bonnie, and Martina, our stage management team, you know, making sure that we were respected and appreciated, and we were in a safe, brave space. Because there's a great deal of intimacy between Eddie and Ani too. And again, right. You just gotta, again, that's the demand of the story is what it is. And I think that's where this play really, really pops and crackles. In those quiet moments, in those silent moments, in the intimacy between the bodies. And I think, so you just gotta go there.
Yeah. I found myself being very protective over Greg's body in a lot of ways, talking about intimacy, you know, like, I mean, I just found myself, I mean, Greg, I don't know if you saw that, like, during our rehearsal process, but I was just, like, very, like, nobody's going to be cold, like, you know, like, things of that nature. I was like, you know, like, no, I got to make sure that, you know, there's certain things that, you know, it was just really, I was just like, no, like, you know, so I still find myself that way.
Totally. I mean, but, I had to also, you know, articulate what was actually going on with my body neurologically, you know, with CP. And there was a lot of, you know, life mirroring art and, you know, this overlap Venn diagram between the characters and Kara and I, you know, and all of that stuff. And just making sure that's the journey of these two characters. See me, understand my body, you know, respect my body. So we don't have because the very John is kind of in danger all the time, you know, just because of his physical circumstances, you know. So yeah. There was a lot of that, you know, and I wouldn't say it was never tense at times, you know, but we worked through it. And that mirroring of our conversations, it was almost exactly what the characters were going through the process. And that was something I think quite magical.
Yeah.
I did spend some time the other night hoping that water was warm because it was a little chilly sitting out there in the house. And I thought, well, I don't want to take a shower right now. It's cold.
We have the best crew. We have like the best crew on Broadway. I might be a little biased, but you know, they are fantastic. I think one of the first previews, like they let it was too hot or something. And they told us they literally had a bucket brigade of people backstage, like pouring in cold water, yeah. Right. Oh, to wow. Keep it regulated. You know, we didn't know that was happening, you know, but like they are on it. They are on it. And they're fantastic. And they actually, what's cool about the play is they, you know, there are four understudies, obviously two, disabled understudies.
Yeah.
My understudy also has cerebral palsy and, Katie's understudy is, paraplegic named Reagan Linton. And so they actually built, again, why we have the best crew, our production manager, Celeste, they have built a dressing room on stage.
For Reagan.
Right? For Reagan. Yeah. I mean, and it's like the nicest room in the,
you know, cozy.
You've got a chandelier and a comfy chair and artwork.
Yeah.
You know, like, and they were all hanging out there the other day. All the understudies were just like chilling in there the other day. Yeah. I was like, I want to be in there.
What's your sense of how, well, Kara, had you seen this play before you auditioned for it? Okay.
No, yeah. I never saw it. I never read it until I read it.
Mm.
And I had only, obviously, like the theater community talks about the pieces that move them.
Mm.
And I feel like I had some kind of pseudo understanding of what the play was about, but I had been hearing about cost of living for a very long time.
Yeah.
In the theater community. So I mean, that was also obviously intriguing of like what moves people and like what shifts consciousness in people is always something that's like gonna spark something inside of me.
Yeah. And so, Greg, tell us a little bit about how the play has changed and how, in particular, John has changed, the part you play has changed.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the play hasn't changed hugely, right, since the first presentation of the full-length in Williamstown. little things here and there. But I've changed. You know, like, I've grown up with this, you know, I feel like I've really grown up with this play. And, you know, full disclosure, it's like, there are a lot of obstacles to my participation in life, and in particularly this industry. So I feel like when I started, I was as green as grass in a lot of ways. So I have really learned how to kind of, I've really had the great opportunity to learn my craft, you know, work with amazing people, you know. And so I just feel more confident, you know. I'm a father now, you know, like, my whole, just everything, my world is much larger than it was, you know, when we started. And I just have the fantastic privilege of working with the amazing Carrie Young. You know, there's just, you know, she said, you know, we're always going to be finding it. It's never, you know, people talk about previews and opening and, you know, and I'm like, that doesn't, I don't even know what that means, you know, because every night I still have to show up, be present and respond to what this beautiful, you know, actor is giving me every night. You know, I have to match her grace and power, you know, so I think that's, and that is really, really cool. You know, that is really fantastic. There's something, I don't know what it is. This is my first time on Broadway. So I don't, I'm just kind of blown away by the response and the energy from the house every night. But I feel the mix, the alchemy between the four of us, there's something really special going on. Even though we don't have any scenes with David and Katie, you know, like, we are a tight ensemble. We were joking last night at the stage door. Everyone's gone. You know, we're hanging out on 47th Street.
Don't really for like an hour.
Just talking to each other, you know. Because we just, I don't know, it just feels lovely. And this is a rare time, you know, there's no guarantee that this will happen again, or, you know, you never know what's going to work or what's going to be received, or, you know, like, I don't know, my phone's not ringing, you know, it's like, okay, so I want, you know, like, day to day, enjoy the time, enjoy the ride, because this is, you know, the show, like, the big show on the Great White Way, you know, like, so this is, we're having a blast, we're working hard. You know, but I think we're, I think, I don't know, I love that work, you know. Karen and I have to be told to go on break.
We do.
You know, we're both like, I just think, like, we're similar.
Wait, what?
Yeah, no, we got to get this right, you know, let's figure this out. No, we'll get there, come on, you know. But I think we just are so, and that's what I love, I just think we have, I don't know. I think we're similar in a lot of ways, just for as actors, and you know, how we work and our attention and passion for the work, and how we dive into things. And I love that. We just want to get up and do it. You know, it's like, just do it. Find it. You know, and so yeah. Until, you know, and probably, I don't know. We'll know if we ever, like, that magical thing happens where suddenly you enter the Matrix and, like, you're just moving, you know, and, like, the, it's just happening to you, you know, mm-hmm. that amazing magical merge between yourself and character where the world opens up. But that's very rare. So every day we're like digging in every night, and it's, I say it's work, but it's a real, real pleasure, you know, every evening.
Yeah. And there's, like, the collective, like, everything you said is so beautiful, Greg. The collective, like, the fact that theater is, it's really special and sacred and ancestral and spiritual. It's a spiritual experience. And there's something about Martina Mayoke is doing something like that on the page already, you know? There's something spiritual and ancestral, and there's so much history on that page. And she does it in a way where, like, lifted, fully realized with all of the elements, sound, set, costume, actors, being in the space of a theater, people sitting down for 2 hours, being with us in this world. There's, like, to be in the theater in this time to make, to come out, you know, and be with us for the 2 hours that we're, that we've been working on for a month. Like, if there's something really, there's an inexplicable something about that, right? Like what we do or what we've decided to do with our lives, and how we've all come together in community to share this this story.
Greg, you're also a dancer and you're an advocate and you're an artistic director. How do you think about the work you do as an actor, and, you know, in particular, the work you're doing in this play, as fitting into kind of the overall scope of your activities?
Yeah, I mean, it's all on a continuum, I think, or they're all tributaries that I think feed into the same, hopefully the same source, right? I would just go back to my body on stage. Katie's body on stage is a radical experimental act. You know, we are on the forefront of something. Like the fact that we are embodying these characters who have physical disabilities, again, for eons, you know, that was, the practice has been to cast non-disabled in disabled roles, right? That kind of erasure, that kind of symbolic annihilation is something we have just been dealing with historically forever. And even in this industry, it happens still to this day, you know, and there are a lot of issues, you know, related to that. So at the end of the day, I want to work, you know, I want to get into a room and I want to make stuff with people, you know, I want to make good work with people. And so everything is, I think that may be reductive, but really that's all the things you listed and all these different hats that I wear. I'm not the only actor, you know, has to do multiple things, right? It's taken on multiple roles, right, to make that happen. I think my particular idiosyncrasies and my challenges, while there overlaps, you know, particular to my experience and the experience of members of my community. But at the end of the day, I just want to make work, because plays are the currency with which we in the theater deal with. You know, dancers can go to the bar every day. Musicians can play their instrument every day. Painters and sculptors can paint every day, you know, or sculpt. Actors need an enterprise, right? And things, you know, a lot to occur before they can practice their craft in most cases, right? And that usually happens with the script, you know, with the playwright. So it's develop work, develop content, give people the opportunity to do that in plays that where they can show up as themselves, where there's a seamless kind of integration between disability and character, or, you know, whatever it is. I don't know. I'm just really, in my mind, I was inspired by other communities, African-American communities, LGBTQ plus communities, Asian-American, you know, they had these culturally specific theaters where they developed their work, you know, where they had spaces, you know, where they could build their talent, right? Hone their craft, show up and be in community with one another. And eventually that proliferated through to the mainstream, right? And larger platforms of film and television and wherever we are today, you know? And I felt like I never felt that. I didn't see that for my community, you know? So I was like, well, somebody's got to do it. You know? But we are integrated with, the disabled experience is an integrated experience, you know? So it's not about being separate. It's how are we, what are our stories? What are our histories? Who are our villains? Our role models are, you know, where do we come from? What is our individual and collective history and identity? And again, that's what theater has done. Again, it's in the storytelling, right? And bringing that to an audience and sharing that. And I think I'm in awe of that power.
And Kara, this is your second show on Broadway. You made your Broadway debut last season, and you were nominated for a Tony for it. What? Tell me about that. What that attention has meant for you as you're back on Broadway and as you're sort of looking ahead.
She's impossible.
Yeah,
she's impossible.
What are you talking about? Greg.
I'm kidding.
You know, I don't want to sound I don't want to sound like, you know, it's a beautiful chaos. I feel the real prize is getting to really work with incredible people and incredible artists. And I feel like the prize is getting to do the show and getting to step into roles that are going to do something to people, right? I think though there's certain things that can be very fleeting, right? Like the sparkly things are very appreciated because they're so unexpected when it happened. That was such an unexpected thing. Because I was really focused on the work. So it was very unexpected of what that was. And I feel like the opportunity to delve into these worlds, it requires so much of the artist to really go there. And I hope that I only hope that I serve the playwright and the director and the vision as best as I can, you know, and that is always right here for me, you know? Yeah. I don't know if that, sometimes I talk and I'm like, I don't know if, like, Greg has read a lot of books and I'm like, yeah. I don't know if I'm making any sense. You know?
I just talk a lot.
Yeah.
So all appreciated and all beautiful. I can't believe I get to do this every day. I literally wake up and sometimes I'm in that theater and like, I'm like standing next to Greg. I'm like standing next to David Zayas and I just want to cry. I'm like, wait, what? What am I doing? And like, you're honoring the little girl in you, you know, you're like, oh my God, you're honoring your dreams. Like you followed through, you said yes, constantly to yourself. And that, you know, yeah, it's all very magical.
Yeah. Well, you're going to continue to be on stage every night with Greg through the run of The Cost of Living. And we look forward to seeing what's next for you both after that. Thank you so much. Thank you both for talking to me.
Gordon, thank you so much.
Yeah, Gordon, a real pleasure. Thank you. Thank you.
That was the actors Greg Mozgalla and Carrie Young of Cost of Living, now playing on Broadway at the Friedman Theater. If you like what you're hearing on this and other episodes of Stagecraft, I'd really appreciate it if you took the time to rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps us grow our audience of folks who love theater as much as you and I do. Or tell a friend about Stagecraft, or give us a shout out on social media. Find past episodes and subscribe at all the pod purveyors, including Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on the Broadway Podcast Network, which is a great place to find more theater for your ears. Until next episode, find me on Twitter at @gcoxvariety. Thanks for listening, and see you at the theater.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com and, of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.